Are we going to reference the timeline?
I have it bookmarked.
Oh, please, no. We can't. We don't.
No, no.
We can't acknowledge that.
No.
I think Iwata drew it up on a napkin.
Okay.
Like his business plans.
Yeah. It's true.
Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. I was this close to making a Link sound, but I thought, no, it's 2014. We're better than that.
You're not making sound effects? Is that your New Year's resolution?
I'm just not going to sound like grunty Nintendo characters this year. Except for Animal Crossing. That's funny. I mean...
Yeah, that's... Oh, God, I hate those Animal Crossing voices.
That's not even what it is.
There he goes. There he goes. And those of you watching us live on Twitch right now will notice that we have a third chair with us tonight. We have John the Icon Master Marstall joining us again to talk all things Zelda. John, how are you tonight?
Hello, I'm really good. It's good to be back with you guys.
I know, yeah. So we've been telling the audience for the last couple of weeks, reminding them to go back and listen to all the way to episode 15
yeah.
for the last time you were on, which was literally almost 100 episodes ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's, first of all, it's amazing that you guys have stuck with it for this long. That's a big congrats right there for any podcast to hit triple digits.
It's been a challenge, but a really fun time, I think. I don't know. What about you, Ryan?
I mean, you know, I've always been a fan of Zelda, but to stick with it this long... Oh, we're talking about Gamers Inn?
Yes, Gamers Inn.
Actually, both were very tough for both of us. Jocelyn fell off the wagon a little bit, but I think with this one, she's really enjoying it.
Which one are we talking about now? Podcast or Zelda?
Zelda. But no, Gamers Inn's been a lot of fun, and Skype continues to be our fourth annoying... chair.
Yes. We're technical difficulties again tonight. So again, those of you watching the video stream, our audio shouldn't be affected, but we are having issues with our Skype call. So their videos may come and go, but they'll still be there. We'll just keep on trucking. So I guess we can probably jump right into this. We're not going to do what we're playing this week because all we're playing is Zelda. So before we get right into it, I just want to say that Ryan and I really appreciate your continued support of our show, along with the support of our sponsor, Doghouse Systems. You can use the code TheGamersIn to double your RAM when you purchase a new gaming rig. Head on over to doghousesystems.com and get your order on. So this week, we are going to be talking all about The Legend of Zelda, A Link Between Worlds on the 3DS. So all three of us have been playing the crap out of this game. I actually bought my 3DS as the, like, official Zelda Link Between Worlds special edition version. So I've really, really been enjoying it, and I'm going to admit that just like Skyward Sword, I haven't actually finished the game yet.
But you are going to finish this one.
So close. Oh, I am. Oh, God, yes, I am.
That's going to be tricky, so we need to avoid spoilers for Jocelyn's sake.
I'm not too worried about spoilers. I was thinking about it, but really, the general plot of all Zelda games is kind of the same.
No, this is the one game that where they throw the curveball.
Really?
Yeah.
I think I might have actually spoiled the curveball for me. Mm. Well, I don't know. I read something online by accident when I was trying to find like a synopsis thing. And so I think I might know what the twisty thing at the end is. But yeah.
Okay. Well, we should at least warn the listeners that spoilers could be imminent.
Yes. Many, many, many spoilers. So far I have cleared the left-hand side of the map. So I've got the three things that you need to get to be able to go to the other world. And then I've cleared the swamp temple, the desert one, the forest one, and one other one that I couldn't remember, but it's kind of like the first one you get to.
Right.
But it's so long ago that I literally can't remember.
So is it the thieves dungeon? That's one of the first.
Oh, yes, it is the thieves. Yeah, that's right. That's why I couldn't remember it, because you didn't really need to do anything special. You just kind of popped out into the world, and then you're running around the village, and then, you know, there's a door sort of thing, and you're like, oh, maybe I should go in here. Oh, it's a dungeon.
It took me much longer than I would be willing to admit to figure out that when it said knock on the door, it literally meant walk up to the door and push a button.
That was one of those
instances.
What
were you doing, trying to get bombs?
No, I mean, the doors, they look like trigger doors. You know, they look like the kind of Zelda doors that you have to go find a switch somewhere for. And so I'm like, I'll keep looking around town for a switch to open this door. And they got me. They got me with that one.
That one was tricky. You know what I tried to do? Like, in Link to the Past, you could use your sword to kind of clink against walls. I thought, it's like, okay, and this is a Link to the Past 2, essentially, so I should be able to do that. So I kept going up to it and pushing B and pushing B, and it didn't work. So it was just push A, you had to talk to the guy and give him a password or something.
Yeah,
you had to, like, guess the last two lines of the song. Like, he would say three lines of a verse, and you had to finish it, and then he would say three more, and you had to finish it. So I literally, like, I didn't even walk around the town, talk to anybody. I just walked up to the door, hit the button, guessed right, and walked in.
Yeah, I did the same thing.
Yeah.
And then later on, I found somebody who told me the song, and I was like, oh, I was totally supposed to explore. Yeah. I didn't explore. Which is one of the things I love about this Zelda, is you can just go and figure things out. You don't have to find or do a specific thing. You can just, if you can do it, you just go.
And there is no small, ever-present sprite telling you what Nintendo thinks you're supposed to do next.
And it never tells you what button to push either.
Well, I was playing, I had beaten the game, and I saw that John had collected all the little squid babies, so I'm like, I'm going to go try and do that too.
Okay.
So when I was doing that, there is that little Nintendo Navi character telling you what to do, and it's that broom chick. Every time you teleport, she says, you should do this, or she'll strongly suggest saying, if you're stuck, you should go and talk to the fortune teller. And
maybe I haven't been stuck yet, because I don't ever remember seeing that message. I have no idea what you're talking about with you finding the hundred of whatever. What the heck is a squid baby? I'm halfway through finding the sages, and I don't even know what you're talking about.
You don't hear those little chirps all around you, like when you're running around? You're not playing with sound.
I play with the sound off, because I am often on the bus.
That will make it a little harder.
Because they make a little chirping sound, and basically there's a little, right before the water temple, there's a little path off to the side that you can go to where this giant mommy squid is, and she'll say, find all my babies. And then when you find the babies, for every 10 you find and turn in, she sucks an item into her and spits it out, and it's brand new and all shiny. But I don't know how it works.
You can get some awesome upgrades. Mm-hmm. The bow will shoot three arrows in a kind of a spreader fashion.
Mm-hmm. I thought you meant like the ice and the fire and the light arrows. And I was like, but best squid ever.
Yeah.
It's a good squid.
You can upgrade all your weapons, all your tools. Some of them are just kind of, you know, they look nicer. They don't really do much.
Yeah.
But then some of them, like the bow and arrow, the fire rod, are actually much better weapons if you can get them upgraded.
I'm not a huge fan of the bow. I haven't used it very much. I find the bow and the hook shot are really, really difficult because I find I can never get them pointed just the right way. Mm. So, yeah, I think three projectiles would probably help me quite a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so I don't know, like, I mean, we kind of touched on a little bit how we've all got into the first dungeon kind of in different ways, but what order did you guys decide to play things in? Because I was just kind of wandering around and seeing, you know, like, I knew that I liked the hookshot from the first games and thought that that would probably be a good way to get around, and I bought the bow right off, and I was just kind of walking around trying to figure out. And it took me way longer than I would like to admit to figure out how to get into that stupid swamp temple. I tried everything. I bought every item.
Yeah.
Forgot it's kind of a hookshot.
It's kind of a swamp / desert temple, right? I mean, we're talking about the one in Lowrul?
Yes, yeah.
In the southwest? Yeah. And yeah, you kind of have to go through both areas to finish that temple, which is really cool. That was the great thing about this game for me, is that you could choose your own order and choose your own adventure with these dungeons. You know, see, everybody has to go through the Eastern Palace first before anything else. But then you have the Tower of Gales and the Tower of Hira, and you can do those in either order. then the rule opens up and you can do those seven dungeons in any order. I don't exactly remember which one I did before any of the other dungeons, but I remember that I did the ice ruins much earlier than I think I was kind of supposed to, because that's a really hard dungeon.
That's how I felt about the desert one. That's the one that I did next, was trying to get into that desert, and that boss took me forever by the time I actually got there.
Yeah. Yeah, the kind of big plant that comes up out of the ground, and you're making the sand pathways to...
Yes, to try to hit it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was tough. So what about you, Ryan? Where did you make four first?
It's weird. I agree with John. I think I did the same thing. Like, after you beat the first two temples, you can really do those two in any order you want, and you're not really penalized. But I found that when I was doing the second part, where you're saving the sages, that if you could do it in any order you wanted, but there was kind of like a couple that you should have done first to get like the armor and the upgrade for the sword.
I have my sword fully upgraded now, but mm-hmm. I didn't know that there was armor, so I have zero armor right now. Everything that touches me is like just murdering me.
So it was probably a good idea for me, which I did not do, but to write down where those items were. If you want to do hero mode and you don't want to like quickly die, because the difference is when you go into the dark world, those guys that throw the bombs would take like three hearts off of you. And then
that's
with
what they're doing right now.
Yeah, exactly. So then with the armor, and by armor, it's just, well, I won't spoil it. It's armor, and and it gives you it cuts it in half, really. And it's essential, because you know you only have 20 hearts, but by the time you get to that boss, and the fairies only restore like what, 4 or 5 hearts.
Five, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they take you down pretty quick, and I was really surprised that. There was a lot of parts in that game that I actually didn't do before I beat the game. Like, I never got the Pegasus boots, you know? Those are all side stuff. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's weird. It's but no, in terms of an order, I don't think... I just, like, if I couldn't get to it, I just turn around and go do something else, mm-hmm. which is great.
I totally should have done that, because I got hung up. I beat the dungeon with the thieves, and mm-hmm. then I kept trying to get to the desert. And I know Ryan and I talked about this a few weeks ago, where I was just completely and utterly stuck, and I could not figure out how I got over there. And I know, I knew that I had done it once, but then there was a little while there where probably about a week and a half, where I didn't pick it up. And then I just completely forgot the path that I took to get into the desert. But I could see on the map all of the little, like, vertical colored lines showing me the portal, the portals between worlds I'd found. So I'm like, I know I've been there. I can see the lines. I know I've been there. I was driving myself mad trying to figure out how to get back. Mm-hmm. Eventually I did, but it was so frustrating.
Yeah, turning around was really nice, and just going elsewhere. Felt like you felt like you're like, yeah, screw you, Sage. Then you're going to be stuck there for a little bit longer in your fancy painting frame. I'm going elsewhere.
you guys remember the original Legend of Zelda? I mean, for me, I played it so long ago that it's a little vague now. But I do remember that you could pretty much walk anywhere on that overworld map. And you could walk into areas of that overworld that you were very much not supposed to be in. You know, you could go way up north to Death Mountain and face those Lynels with their sword beams long before you had the weapons to deal with them. Mm. And you can do that in Link Between Worlds.
You definitely can get decimated.
Yeah.
And for me, that is exactly what Nintendo ought to be providing with Legend of Zelda, is a world that I can wander out into, explore, encounter dangers that I'm not ready for yet, and then decide, you know, I'm going to go ahead and brave it and you know, get my behind handed to me, or come back later when I'm a little bit more prepared. And it's so great to me that they trust the player enough in that game to leave that up to you, rather than trying to handhold you and gate you via some item that you don't have yet in order to prevent you from getting into those situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the nice part about this game is that they give you best of both worlds. They allow you to explore. They allow you to go around. They set the world up for you. But they also nudge you in the right direction by putting that little X on the map, which was sort of like, you know, here's where all of the people are that you need to save. Get around to it at some point. They are in horrible danger and probably being tortured, but so you might want to hurry up, but don't worry about it.
Someone's stabbing the painting with scissors.
No, they're just painting little mustaches on all of them in different colors, like, you know, giving them an old Wario stash. Yeah. But there you go. Yeah, it's just, it was perfect for me because I like to explore, but I also like to know where I need to go.
Mm-hmm. I like the direction.
Yeah, just a little X on the map. And I mean, I didn't go back and listen to our episode from 2 years ago, but judging by the notes, I reviewed them. We talked about this in the opposite. Like, this is almost the high rule to the low rule that was last 2 years ago. See what I did there, guys?
Yeah.
You know?
Very witty.
Well, I try. That's why I'm here. But no, I just really enjoyed the way what they done, and I hope that based on do we know how well this game did? I know it did very well critically, but did it do well in sales? Like,
I don't know. I don't know sales numbers. Mm.
It did.
Just let me Google that for you.
Okay, well, you do that. Jocelyn's gonna Google it. But if it does do well, and the main dude, man, I'm usually pretty good with that. What's his name? The guy who's been writing on napkins, not Awada. Chief,
you're talking about Anuma.
Yeah, Anuma. He has stated that this 3DS game is sort of the beginning of all the changes they've been experimenting on. And if this is
I would like to believe that, but I don't believe it.
You don't believe it.
I think they're on the console side. I think they're so tied to the Ocarina of Time model, and they cannot get out of that groove. The 3DS allows them to experiment and deviate because the expectations are not there in the same way that they are for console Zelda. Mm. I think Nintendo is terrified of moving away from that over-the-shoulder 3D lock-on with some helpful sprite that tags along for the entire game kind of approach that they've been following since the first, you know, the N64 Zelda games. And I think their conservatism is just going to keep killing them in that series on the console side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish I could say you're wrong, but you're probably right. But I hope you're wrong.
As of December 12th, so that would have been 3 weeks after the game released, I think, maybe not even quite that much, 400,000 copies in the US.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. For a Nintendo game and a mobile title and all the rest of it, 3 weeks in, that's pretty fantastic. So, yeah.
No, I mean, I'm hoping that they break out, and we won't know for sure until E3, and you know, it might just be the same thing. It'll be, well, okay. They do the same thing with Nintendo, or the same thing with Mario, the same thing with Donkey Kong. Who's to say that they're going to break the mold with Zelda, probably one of their most treasured franchises? If anything, they're going to try something different with, I don't know, they keep beating Star Fox up. Why don't they try something different with him first? You know, it sucks, but I don't know. I really hope that they do kind of do something different. But
with all the success, they might take a look at this versus the numbers of, say, like Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword and just go, wow, like those ones didn't do this well, didn't sell that fast. You know, we have a really large, strong fan base who want to buy our game, who go out and buy consoles. Like, I don't know what the numbers of the specific Zelda console that I bought are, but I mean, like, if they've got these kind of numbers coming out of the 3DS versus their console titles, I mean, maybe it will be enough to be like, well, if the dollars are voting this way, then maybe we'll change it. I can always hope.
Well, Nintendo has publicly stated after the numbers that got unleashed last week that they just seem surprised. Finally, they've clued in. They're surprised that they're not doing so well. They're like, oh, what's going on? And they're kind of saying, we're going to have to reevaluate the business model. Now, I get excited, but people who are not happy with Nintendo already are like, yeah, fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice, all that normal thing. But I kind of think that releasing the same old Nintendo title, like a new Zelda that is just literally Zelda, you know, it's not different at all. Mm-hmm. Nintendo's already proven that that's not going to work. Because look at Mario. It's another 3D platforming Mario game that's excellent, but it's not different enough that has caused the console to start selling. Mm-hmm. It's a great game, and it's a great Nintendo game, but it's not different to make people want to put down their PS4s, Xbox Ones, and hell, Xbox 360s to go pick up this new console. Yeah. So they have to try something different. They can't make another Ocarina of Time. Well, they can, but it's just not going to save them.
They'll just remake it again.
They will. Yeah. They will.
Yeah. However many, 10th anniversary HD. Or whatever. Yeah.
They'll remake that game. But I'm telling you, I don't want them to make Legend of Zelda, insert new subtitle here, that is essentially just another...
It is just a clone, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think Nintendo's games are the problem with the Wii U.
Well,
games that they're making are fine.
Yeah.
Mario 3D World is fine. Pikmin 3 is fine. The problem is they're the only ones making games for the Wii U.
Yeah.
And that's not enough. It's not enough for a $300 system that's going to take up space and probably replace something in your entertainment center. Mm-hmm. You know, when you pick up an Xbox One or a PS4, your expectation is most of the games coming out, no matter the publisher, Activision or Konami or Capcom or whoever it is, I'm probably going to be able to get that game on this system. With the Wii U, the expectation is that you will not get that game for that system. The only games you'll have access to are almost exclusively Nintendo-published games, which are great. You know, most of them are very good. But Nintendo cannot carry that load themselves anymore. And they're not on the 3DS. The 3DS is a great third-party library. I was just playing the Bravely Default demo from Square Enix last night. You know, cool turn-based RPG, the kind of game that, you know, you're probably not going to see on the Wii U because Square Enix is not going to get the return that it needs to design a game for that. But on the 3DS, it's there. On the 3DS, you know, all the major publishers are putting out cool games, well-regarded, well-reviewed games for it.
Mm-hmm. Now, is that just the requirement of hardware parity with the systems? Like, you think if they made a Wii U 2 and made it the same graphical intensity that the PS4 and Xbox One has, that essentially is just, I mean, I am a programmer, but I know there's no button that says, okay, now that it's a similar hardware, we can just hit the compile on Wii U button here. That's not true, but it is essentially a lot easier to build a game for similar hardware. You know, if the Wii U, they have to have a separate team develop for the Wii U. So you're right. Like, unless the company is going to say, set out, like Ubisoft has been doing, set out to make an exclusive Wii U game, probably not going to see it. I mean, we're not going to see any more because now that the PS4 and Xbox One is out, it's like, that's their focus. And there's no point. There's no money in making a Wii U title.
I don't think Nintendo needs hardware parity with the competition. Mm-hmm. I think they need to make life easy for developers, whatever that means.
Yeah.
You know, if that means making, you know, switching to AMD chips so that the programming tools carry over better, it might just mean, you know, providing better support to the developers. I know some developers complain that Nintendo doesn't have a lot of English speakers that are able to provide development support for them. Nintendo has always regarded third parties as a nice to have, you know, as icing on the cake. If they want to make games for a system, we're not going to stop them, and that's fine. But they've never had the attitude of, we need these guys to survive, and we need to go out and develop these relationships, make sure they're getting what they need to produce great content for our system. That's the attitude that they need to have now.
Mm-hmm. So do you think Nintendo takes another napkin off the pile and writes third parties on it and takes it back to Tokyo and says, this is what we're going to do, guys? Do they do something different?
they have talked that talk more than once. I mean, it's a litany that we've heard at least since the GameCube era and possibly earlier. And they just continue to not deliver on that promise. I don't know what they're doing wrong. I can only see that there is something going wrong in the relationship with third parties. And, you know, we can all read the complaints from insiders at these development studios about Nintendo's relationship with them. I don't have that solution, but I think they need to solve it.
Maybe they should put out a new Zelda game for it.
I was going to say, so back to Zelda.
I take blame for that one. That was my fault.
Yeah, that was totally your rabbit hole there. So, I mean, we were talking a little bit about the consoles and the, you know, transfer over of the success of the Link Between Worlds over to potentially the Wii U. I wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about mechanics, because the one thing about the 3DS is you have that 3D feature there. So for me, I mean, that's almost akin to motion control in that I was like, whoa, you're going to do what to the what in my Zelda now? Like, no. Just let me just push four buttons, and I'll get to the buttons later, but just let me push four buttons and, you know, move around, and I don't need anything more than that. So what did you guys think about the implementation of the 3D in Link Between Worlds?
I did not use it. I was on a 2DS for almost the entire game.
Whoa.
Just blew Ryan's mind.
Someone owns a 2DS.
Buy those, yeah.
Wait, you have kids though, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
We do. It's a great way to get into that library. You know, it's affordable. They're nice to use. They're comfortable to hold, and
much less
you have
like
access to all the same games. So, you know, that did not cause any problems for me. Obviously, some of the puzzles were designed with levels of depth to them, and there were times where I said to myself, I wonder if this would make a little more sense on a 3DS than a 2DS. But when I actually got to try the game on a 3DS XL that my nephew had, I was trying to solve a puzzle that had been giving me trouble on the 2DS, and the 3D did not help me at all. I had trouble even maintaining the 3D sweet spot. So I think playing on the 2DS was fine.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I know both Ryan and I have talked about difficulties that we have, and I wear glasses, and I don't. Ryan, do you wear your glasses when you play on the 3DS?
The 3D only works when I have my contacts in. The glasses do something weird to it.
Yeah, that's my big problem, is that I almost have double vision. The second one is quite faint, and I can see the 3D all right, but it's almost like a drop shadow or something. Like,
yeah,
it looks
exactly.
So weird. So I play with it almost completely off, although I've run into some of those puzzles too where you think, okay, wait, or I'll try to like jump onto something I think is below me and I run into a wall instead because it's an up pillar, not a down pillar.
Yeah.
So I've definitely experienced the kind of, oh, that would have been more clear in 3D moments. But overall, I mean, motion control on the Wii and the Wii, well, I guess I haven't actually tried it on the Wii U, but I assume it still sucks.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, but trying it on the Wii, I mean, it just almost, it broke the gameplay for me. Like, I just hated it so much, and you're sitting there, whoosh, 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 whoosh. It's like, damn it, no, I just want to push a button. And I never felt that way with the 3D. Like, I mean, there was some parts where I felt I turned it on, and it helped a little, but for the most part, I could just leave it off, and it was like it wasn't even there. And if they could do that with their consoles, where it was just optional, and I could say, I don't want anything to do with motion control, I would be such a happy camper.
Yeah. The 3D, I played it in 3D a lot. I even played it today, just kind of like playing around with it and trying the different mechanics just to familiarize myself with it. And the 3D looks great. I never really ran into any issues where I needed it to solve a puzzle, but it just really made everything look cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a moment, I think there's a moment on Death Mountain where you kind of have to continuously jump off platforms, and in 2D sometimes you'd lose your footing and you misstep and you wouldn't really know where you're going to land, but in 3D it was always very clear where you were going, where you were landing. And again, to me, it was all about aesthetics. It just looked really cool. It added to the already excellent art style, and it didn't impact performance whatsoever. But again, totally optional. And I don't think Nintendo's really made a game on the 3DS that requires 3D, or at least a major game that required 3D, as opposed to on the Wii and Wii U, where they were making games, specifically Skyward Sword, to keep it on topic, that required motion control.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was not optional. And I think that's where you sort of cut your market in half. Like, there are still people out there who do not like motion control. There are people out there that do not like 3D because they literally can't use or see it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important that Nintendo made it optional. I'm certain they could have done stuff where it's like, if you don't use 3D, you're boned, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But no, it just looked great, and that was really the only thing it added to it.
Yeah. No, I felt the same. So I had it. Oh, the one part in the forest temple, mm-hmm. right when you go in the front door. And again, I had my 3D off and this still scared me so badly. When the very first time that the like disembodied hand pops up over your face, like from the bottom of the screen, I was just like, oh, right. And that kind
of. The Wallmaster.
Yeah, that was the first. I remember that. The disembodied hand being really frightening in Ocarina of Time as well. And I feel like it was such a better implementation of the idea in this one because, I mean, I went out of my way so many times to kill it because in Ocarina of Time, when you killed it, it didn't come back. Whereas this one, it's like it bought you maybe 30 seconds and then it was back again. That whole entire temple, I felt like I was in constant peril and I had to do things really quickly to get out of the way or duck underneath something. And I felt that at least the four temples that I've played so far in Low Rule are really challenging. And I feel like I could die at any moment. And I would rather feel like that in a video game than feel like I'm getting my hand held. What do you guys think on the difficulty level? Was it too hard, too easy, good balance? What do you think? Any frustrating points?
It was the perfect balance for me. And, you know, I went out of my way to make it more challenging for myself. There are lots of optional challenges in Link Between Worlds. There's treasure dungeons that are completely separate from the Seven Sages dungeons that you do not have to tackle at all. They just get you lots of rupees. And they're some of the most interesting, challenging puzzles in the game. They really use that 2D wall crawling mechanic ingeniously and make you really think about the layout of the rooms. I completed all of those. I completed
the... Which is so funny because I just found one this afternoon on the way home on the bus. And I was like, I started going in, started getting some money, and then I'm going on and on and on. I'm like, what is this? Why is this even here? And then I got to a puzzle that was even just remotely challenging, and I'm like, why am I even here? Okay, I'm out.
It's for the challenge.
It's like, well, I have sages to find before Friday night.
but seeing a lot of Zelda games in the past, rupees were kind of extraneous, you know, right? Because once you buy a few things, once you get your shield and, you know, fill up a few bottles of potion, there's not a lot to spend your money on. But in this game, you need to buy those items. And some of those items cost 1,200 rupees.
I know. They're so expensive.
To buy, for real. which is great.
Yeah.
Because it gives you motivation to hunt for rupees in the regular dungeons, to go through those treasure dungeons, to fill up on rupees as much as you can, because you will eventually use them.
Have you guys ever hit a point where you wanted to buy something to get to the next temple and you weren't able to because you didn't have enough?
No, I mean, I always had enough to rent. Story of my life.
No,
eventually, I got a mortgage down on that fire rod, and I eventually was able to get it out of that place. But
did Tom Nook come to collect?
No, Tom Nook is a baby compared to this Ravio guy. I mean, that hood, you don't know what's under there.
That's true.
But
Tom Nook will not leave your corpse on the dungeon floor.
Tom Nook won't send his little baby raccoons after your items when you die. At least he'll help you up.
He repossesses your items.
Oh, man. So
Tom Nook will let you keep the house.
Yeah, he'll just wait forever for you to pay those bells. He'll even take them from your dying corpse when you eventually do perish.
Those of you who are totally lost right now, this is an Animal Crossing reference. This is not a Zelda reference. But yeah, I found that I've hit my first, rupee wall, and I finished my fourth dungeon, and I went to go get the bombs, and I didn't have enough. And I was like, because I've been buying everything outright because I didn't ever want to lose anything. Mm-hmm. So I've bought everything outright, and it's a good thing because I died like probably 10 or 15 times trying to beat that desert sand boss. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's a good thing that I bought all my items because otherwise I would have just blown through all my money. But now I found that I had to buy the bombs because you can't really go anywhere on the right-hand side of the map without them. Everything is behind the kind of cracked wall sort of thing that you know you can blow up. Except you can't blow up the really big rocks. What's that about?
Yeah. Well, have you seen where the big bomb is?
I found the Big Bomb once, and I haven't been able to find it again. I have a general idea.
Well, it's south of town. It's just south of town.
Yeah.
But you have to be very careful with leading it around the map because it's very fragile.
It's not fragile. It's got a low fuse, we'll say.
Yeah, it's volatile. Yeah. That's right.
Hydroglycerin minigame in Legend of Zelda.
Nitroglycerin.
Nitro. What did I say?
Hydro. That's not a thing.
It isn't yet. Maybe it's a Nintendo thing. We don't know that yet.
Yeah, really. We mentioned it a couple minutes ago when we were talking about some of the puzzles, but I wanted to touch on the 2D wall crawling mechanic. So in Link Between Worlds, you have the ability very early on to basically stick to a wall as a painting. And that's kind of the theme that runs through the entire game, is the super evil guy from Lorule is transforming everyone into paintings. So he does that to Link, and then you get the ability to essentially break away from that spell or invoke the spell whenever you need to. So you can solve puzzles by crawling along walls as a painting. So what did you think about that, John? Was that something that did you enjoy the mechanic? I found it was often implemented almost too much, but it took me a while to get used to. How did you feel about that one?
I thought it was fantastic. I never got tired of that because I think a lot of it, you know, is from coming from Link to the Past and then being presented with this world in the same perspective, the same top-down perspective. My mind like locked onto that and said, okay, this is the way the world is structured. It's a Link to the Past world. And the fact is that world is created in polygonal 3D, and as soon as you merge into a wall, the perspective changes, and you can navigate side to side all around the room until you hit a block. And I never quite got used to that. So even towards the end of the game, the game would, you know, throw another wall merging puzzle at me. And I would be sitting there looking at this room saying, there's nowhere for me to go.
I did that so many times.
And for me, that was fantastic because it was constantly challenging me to get past my own preconceptions about the world of Zelda, the top-down world of Link to the Past and this top-down world of Link Between Worlds. And you know, it sounds like marketing, but think about it in a new way. I really enjoyed that. It was a brain teaser that kept teasing my brain throughout the whole game.
What about you, Ryan? What did you think of the 2D wall crawling?
I thought it was a really neat mechanic. I mean, usually Nintendo likes to throw in this one, Link can stick the walls. Woo! You know?
I looked at it at first and I was super excited about a new Zelda, and then I was like, oh man, it's Paper Mario.
Well, it's not that, Paper Mario, it's not like exactly like that, but it's close, but it's weird. Like, I'm trying to think of other ones, like Nintendo, another one they did that worked really well was Majora's Mask.
You know, I love that.
You have
that
3 days and then you rewind. It's like Back to the Future, but with less old people that yell at you. But, you know, it's. And that one worked, but then I'm trying to think of another one that didn't. But, you know, each one has its own little gimmick or a little thing that you can do differently from all the other ones. And this one was sticking to the wall. And I'm right there with John and you in the sense that there would be puzzles, like especially the treasure puzzles, which are strictly stick to the wall puzzles. And I'd be sitting there like, how am I going to do this? Like, I keep falling. It's like, oh, wait. And then they introduce the sand rod, and then that adds a whole other layer because you're creating your own walls.
Yes,
and
yes.
It's just, it's crazy. It's so good, though. And I hope they don't do it again because it won't be as special the second time, I guess.
Yeah, it completely blew my mind the first time I did that. I was like literally standing there with the sand wand going, I can't get on these things. They're too high. I don't understand. What am I supposed to do? Like making pillar after pillar after pillar after pillar, wasting all my purple energy. And then finally I was just like, oh, wait, merge, right, stick to the wall, right.
Like, that game has a way of making you feel very dumb and very smart at the same time.
Yep, absolutely.
Even that late in the game, you know, you're still slapping your head and saying to yourself, oh, that's right, I can merge to walls. But then once you figure it out and you get to that treasure chest or you get to the next door, you feel pretty good.
Yeah. Absolutely. So one thing that I did notice about the 2D wall crawling, because basically what happens is you go into the wall and you become invincible to whatever's happening around you. So in boss fights in particular, the one in the swamp temple with the kind of octopus thing with all the eyes that you had to hookshot, and then not the desert one, but the forest temple where you had, again, the disembodied hand, but he had a gauntlet on.
The Knuckle Master.
How do you know all the names of these things?
He's got the Prima official strategy guide.
Yeah. It's in the Hyrule Historia.
I haven't read all the way through.
No, I don't know how I know that one. But that was a cool boss.
It was a cool boss, yeah.
You've been dealing with these wall masters for that whole dungeon and solving puzzles with the wall masters, you know, baiting them to
hit pound switches down the buttons and things, and stuff. Mm-hmm.
And then you get to the end of that, and it's the biggest wall master you've ever seen. I thought that was really fun.
These guys again. Except if you kill him, they should all be gone away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I felt a little bit like, almost like I was cheating, in particular in those two boss fights, because it was like, they had these moves where if I got in the way, I would lose like half my hearts. Like, they were these crazy hard-hitting bosses. And yet, if I just merged into the wall, all of a sudden, none of their attacks could touch me. So learned the timing, then I was just like, oh, well, I just, you know, count to five and merge to the wall and then come out and hit them and count to five, merge to the wall. And, you know, I felt almost like there was too much of a rhythm to that. And they used the 2D wall crawling too much as an escape. And I don't know. Did you guys feel the same way? Because I felt like it was the only way to beat those two specific bosses.
So the Dark Palace, they require you to do that because you cannot see the boss. You go into the room and it's totally pitch black in there. You have to light the lanterns in order to see him, and then the lanterns go out. And the lanterns are on opposite corners of that room. So what you have to do is light the lantern, merge with the wall, scoot around to the opposite corner, light the other lantern, and then get out of there and hit him with your sword. So they totally expect you to use that wall merging as part of those boss fights, as long as there's a wall in the room. Some boss fights have no walls.
Mm-hmm. Like the sand boss. Mm-hmm. I haven't actually made it to that boss fight yet. I still have, I guess, the ice one, which I can't figure out how to get to. I'm really struggling with finding my way. I went all the way up to Zora's domain again, and I was just like, oh, it's totally going to be this. Oh, it's not this way. You got me, Zelda. I was like, ice, that's where the water is. But so I still have that one to do. That was where I was heading this afternoon. And then I still have the other two. So I guess the dark one is kind of in the middle on the right-hand side of the map. And then whatever's in the bottom right corner, I haven't done yet either. So I think that's probably fire-based because I haven't hit a fire dungeon yet.
The Turtle Rock dungeon. That's what that is.
Oh, that's a fun one.
Yeah, I found that they, specifically with the swamp dungeon, it was just the water temple all over again. Did you guys notice any other themes in the temples where you recognize them from other Zelda games, other iterations?
I'm trying to think. Like, the ones that were supposed to feel like past dungeons, like the first dungeon you go through it felt very similar to the first dungeon, or maybe it was the second dungeon in A Link to the Past. Mm. But other than that, like, obviously the Wind dungeon, I had just played through Wind Waker, so it felt very similar to like a similar style in puzzles and stuff where you're going through the vents and stuff similar to that. Mm-hmm. But nothing really like called back. It's been so long since I've played some of these Zelda games, so
I think it's probably because I've literally played through Ocarina probably 7 or 8 times start to finish. So, I mean, that one is just so fresh in my head all the time that I was just like, I walked into the swamp temple and I was just like, oh, water temple. Oh, water levels. Yep, here we go. But I did find this one was challenging, but not frustrating. Although the Water Temple is one of my favorites in Ocarina of Time because it is so challenging, it can get really frustrating at times. And this one was very clear about where the water level was and what you had to do to change it. And it was all really easy, all in the same room, as opposed to, you know, being all over the freaking place.
I think I got stuck in that one pretty briefly until you start to realize that the water level, you're sort of stuck with that water level to a certain extent. Like you could, I think you can lower it and get out of specific rooms to have it affect other rooms.
Mm-hmm.
But it was all very, it was confined in a way that didn't make it as complex as the Water Temple in Ocarina, but still interesting.
It took me a really long time to realize that there were two separate water levels, a water level for the first floor and a water level for the basement, and they weren't tied together because I was like, oh, this is really easy. I can just, you know, change the water level to all the way down or all the way up or whatever it was I needed it at the time. And then I went all the way down to the basement and then was like, oh, my water level is the opposite of what I need it to be right now. So once I figured that out, which was very close to the end of the temple, it was quite easy. Well, easy, air quotes. Yeah.
The game was never easy.
No. You know,
which was great. It was never, like, Skyward Sword is fresh enough in my mind that I know that I can say that that game was easy. It pointed you in a direction, you went there, you did this for an hour, and then you were done. Mm-hmm. But in this one, it was sort of like, you know, there were challenges. I died, you know, as sucky as it is to say that I did, but I died, and I watched my items fly away, and it was sad.
That stupid little bird thing.
Yeah, And John's right, you can make it as challenging as you want. Like, you could probably look up a guide for how to make A Link Between Worlds the hardest Zelda game you've ever played. And it's like, do it in this order, and you will hate yourself, but you will be so happy that you did it. Yeah. You know, I don't imagine I'll ever do that, but I'm thinking I might do Hero Mode. I've always liked the idea of playing through a Zelda game again right away, but I've never done it.
Okay, so what is Hero Mode? Because I haven't actually finished the game yet, so I don't know what Hero Mode is. So explain.
Well, Hero Mode's in every Zelda game, I believe. And it's usually like, it's sometimes called Second Quest. But I think in this one, it's literally just you take more damage and that's it.
Yeah, enemies are tougher.
Do you start off with your same amount of hearts and progress through the game the same? Or do you start off with like your full complement of hearts and just have at it?
I don't know. I think I would think you start over, but I could be wrong.
Start over, it's just in like super hard mode.
Yeah, really, you're just starting over in hero difficulty mode. And you know, I think we even talked about this 2 years ago. It's like, it's coming back to me, but it'd be great if you could start in hero mode, you know, like choose a difficulty level, because they've already got the programming there. But I think it is literally just hard mode. So
So do you guys think you're going to play through that? Ryan, you said maybe. John, what about you?
I kind of into Luigi's Mansion now.
You've moved on already. Poor Zelda.
Well, I milked Zelda pretty hard, though. I did the treasure dungeons. I found all the Mai-Mai. I got the Master Ore, all four pieces.
Oh, there's four pieces. There are four pieces. Oh, yeah. Man. I got two, went to the blacksmith. He made my sword pink, which I was like, all right. And then I went back to him again, and he was like, nope, I can't do any more. I've done as much as I can. I'm the best in the world.
What he tells you, I believe, is he tells you, I'm the greatest blacksmith in the world.
Yes, he does. Yeah.
But
so
you know there's another world.
Wait a minute. I've only got a red sword. Is that's not the max?
That's not the max.
I really need to go. Screw hero mode. I need to beat the game.
Just, that's where the compasses really come in handy on those dungeons. Make sure that you've opened every treasure chest in every dungeon.
Sometimes I think I've skipped one or two in a dungeon, and I'm trying to because I remember I went to a few of the kind of extra treasure chests, and they were always just rupees. And I was like, well, you know, I've got enough money, so, you know, I don't have to open everything. Apparently, I have to open everything. Because I think there was one specifically in either the Swamp or the Forest Temple that was one room I never got to. And it just had a treasure chest in it. And I was like, well, I have all the keys to finish the dungeon, so I should probably just move on. You know, whatever. That looks like it's hard. I just want to beat the boss.
Yeah. the Master Ore, I won't spoil it for you, but there is a piece of Master Ore in the Dark Palace, and that is the hardest one to find, in my opinion.
Oh, interesting.
But it is possible. It's just the trick is just particularly ingenious.
Mm. Oh, now I want to go there. Screw you, Ice Temple. So I think that pretty much does it. I guess before we move on, just quickly, favorite and least favorite boss. Ryan, go.
It's really hard. Like, I think I went through the game too quickly because it's really hard for me to remember. And I beat it a while ago, but I beat it over the Christmas break. I'm trying to remember bosses specifically. I mean, the one that comes to mind, just based on our conversations, was the knuckle guy you were talking about. Where they're in past Zelda games, you fought hands, but this one reminded me of the boss looked a lot like the hands you fight in Mario 64, which was gave me, you know, it's like, oh, that's really cool. I'm gonna kill you now. that was a lot of fun, and once you realize that you know, it's a lot easier to get away by just merging to the wall and going away. Yes. Like, I didn't realize that at first. I was trying to traverse the little platforms.
Me too.
And, you know, eventually they go away. And I thought that was probably my favorite. But, you know, the final boss is also really good. But I'm not going to spoil why, because that would be mean. But, yeah, I don't really have a least favorite. I mean, maybe that little worm. That was pretty boring. Like, it was just a bigger worm and you just had to, like, slice at it until it died. That was kind of
boring. Which one was that one?
I think it was, like, early on, so I shouldn't really give it too much discredit, but...
Mm. I'm trying to remember. I don't remember a worm, but again, I played through the first little bit of it right before Christmas, and then I picked it up again probably a week and a half or 2 weeks ago. Mm. So I had a bit of a gap there where I've kind of forgotten what I was doing because stupid Pokemon stole me away from Zelda. What about you, John? What's your favorite and least favorite of the bosses? Yeah.
My favorite was definitely the boss at the end of the Dark Palace. He's such a cool-looking creature. Lights go out, all you see is his glowing eyes as he's chasing you around the room. and he's got some kind of a motion blur effect to him. So they really amped up the drama on that one. It was really fun. My least favorite boss would probably be any boss that they pulled pretty much unchanged from Link to the Past, like the hookshot boss where you're just pulling the eyeballs off.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I got there and it's like, it's still a fun battle. It was a good battle the first time, but I know how
this
goes.
You knew exactly what to do as soon as you see the boss. Do. Yeah.
Pull the hookshot out, just, you know, pull him, drag him back to me and you know, slash at him with my blade until they're dead. So, you know, that kind of stuff was like, it's okay. It didn't hurt the game for me, but definitely not my favorites.
All right, so overall, for A Link Between Worlds, what would you guys say out of 10, how would you rank the game? Yes, I'm putting you on the spot.
I like 1 to 4 as a scale.
Okay, all right, 1 to 4 then, 1 to 4.
because with larger scales, it's too easy to pick a middle ground and not really say anything.
Mm.
You know, like 3 out of 5, what does that mean? It means you don't have an opinion. 5 out of 10, what is that? So
what
out
is
of
that?
4 stars, I will give it 4 stars.
Nice.
It is
can
as
I
good
give
as
half
Zelda
stars?
Game. No, you can't. It's as good a Zelda game as you can play.
Yep. What about you, Ryan? How many stars?
I think John just invented the Gamers in Ranking Scale. Because I like that. I like that idea of 4 stars, no halfsies, no take backsies. You know, this is
Ryan
how we determine game of the year.
Rules and structure.
I'm a programmer. I'm very, you know, logical. If then,
you're
else.
Also very on the fence with like everything. You never want to say anything bad.
That's why this is a great system. You know, and I have to say, like, it was, you know, one of my favorite Zeldas. Like, if I were to sit back and play all of them, it's probably my favorite. But no, 4 stars is a very valid ranking because I loved it. So you really couldn't give it any other ranking. So.
Yeah, I think that's definitely where it is for me too. And I haven't finished it, but what I have experienced keeps me coming back. I'm not bored. I'm challenged. The only thing that keeps me from playing it more often is that the only time I get to play it is on the bus. And depending on the bus driver, it's either super fine and I can play it for an hour, or I feel nauseous after 2 minutes and I have to stop. So,
or you're stuck really in a snowstorm.
Or, yeah, you're stuck in a snowstorm. But, yeah, I think overall, I mean, it's... I love my 3DS. I don't regret my purchase at all. So I would say if you don't have one, go get it to play this game. There are lots of great titles coming out or already out for the 3DS. And I really think that everyone should experience this game. And especially if you're a Zelda fan like this, you cannot miss this title.
No, that's very true.
So I think, oh my God, we all agreed. And not only did we all agree, but we all liked it.
This has probably been the most positive Nintendo-themed episode we've ever had. We even had a conversation about the Wii U, and that went pretty well. We all agree that Nintendo's magic napkins need to come back because they are sorely needing them.
Well, yeah, and in the case that I gave anybody the impression of my last appearance as your guest that I don't like games or that I'm a curmudgeon about games, I do love some games very much. And,
you just have high standards.
I do. I have very high standards for games.
That's good.
Yeah, that is not a bad thing. So just before we move on to where you can find us and where you can find John, I just wanted to remind everybody that you can go and grab a Gamers In shirt over at slashloot.com. So if you want to support the show, we get a part of the proceeds from each of the sales. You can find other shirts as well from the Frog Pants community, from my other show, The Angry Chicken, from Ryan's other show, Zombies Ate My Podcast. I apologize for butchering that.
It's all good. The zombies will get you.
Yeah, that's probably true.
They'll get me too, don't worry. I'm awful with guns.
Not guns, dude. You don't need stuff with ammo. You need to get a good axe.
If you get up in there, they're going to chew your arms off, man. I don't know.
You really just can't win.
No.
So again, that is slashloot.com for all your Gamers In t-shirt needs. So John, why don't you tell everyone where they can find you?
I am Icon Master Online. You do a search for that, you'll find me on Twitter, on app.net, my website, whatever you like.
Are you still using that whole app.net thing?
App.net is my favorite social network.
Really? Man, I tried that for like 2 days. I just can't get away from Twitter. All right, so I think that pretty much does it for us this week on the Gamers Inn. You can visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com. You can find us on Amove TV along with other fabulous podcasts, including StarCast, Campaign Roundtable, Biggest Fan, Amove Radio, and The Angry Chicken. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at GIS Gamer. Ryan is at R. Murphy. John is at Icon Master. And don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/JocelynMoffitt. You can also find us on Facebook and Google+. Sometimes. I make no promises. Also, you can email the show at info@gamersinpodcast.com. So before we go, I just want to give a quick shout out and thank you to Greg Moffitt for creating our music. You can find him on Twitter at SoundsInfluence. We would also like to thank Joel Duggan, who does all of our graphic work. You can find him and everything he does at joelduggan.com. So thanks for staying at the Gamers Inn, and remember, tune in next week.